Okay, so yeah, what you've seen right here is an example of what they call the new student, or so on and so forth. Right? Read the manual. Who reads the manual? And just try things and see what happens. Now, what was I going to talk about? Knowledge, learning objects, and the new student. I guess slides. I even have the right name of the place on the slide, which is good. But I don't want to just stand here and talk for 2 hours because, well, I could actually. I was going to say I can't, but I could. But I don't think that would be the best use of your time and my time, especially with such a small group here. I want to be a lot looser than that, a lot less formal than that, to try to adapt what I have to say to your precise needs. Well, I'm just going to do a wee bit of a survey, first of all, just to see where I'm at. So, it sounds like a silly question, but before you came here to this talk, how many of you had heard of me, gone to my website, things like that? How many of you have that background? Okay, a bit more than half, and then there's a few who aren't sold. Okay. Alright, well, let's find out, because the sort of work that I do, this is a system that's going to look pretty neat. Yeah, this is my learning management system. It may not seem like a learning management system. Certainly Blackboard doesn't give you nice pictures of sunflowers on it. But over the last, since 95 or so, I've sort of been developing this. This is my view of e-learning, and I'm coming from a very different place than most people who are working in this space. Most people who are working in this space they're working in educational institutions. They're thinking of the e-learning that they have to provide as e-learning for classes or cohorts or things like that, has a start date, has a stop date, has a curriculum, has actual real pedagogy, things like that. And my practice hasn't been that. My practice has been through this sort of service. The cornerstone of this, the thing that most people see on my website on a regular basis, this is the fancy house, okay, is this. It's not currently coming into your email box looking like this. I have a little formatting issue, but this is my daily newsletter. It's not really daily. It comes out 5 days a week because I take weekends. And sometimes I miss a day and things like that, you know, traveling or whatever. So I'm not going to hit it every day, but it's pretty regular. And as people say, it just keeps coming. and each day I tap into the actual practice of the field. I'm a practitioner in e-learning in a certain way. I interact with other practitioners. A lot of them feed me stuff. We converse online, and this is what comes out. And this is the point, if you will, to e-learning on my site. And then what I've done from that is I've built up various supports and things behind it. One thing, for example, is that everything I've ever done is all archived. Each number, you can't really see the shading there, but each colored number there represents a separate issue of the newsletter. And all of those are searchable. Those are all actually searchable through Google, which is very nice. Keep things simple. I keep things open. You don't need to log in to get to any of this stuff. You don't need to authenticate. There are no passwords. There's no what nationality are you? Do you work in my organization? It's all open. So there's that. I'm going to fight with this mouse the whole time. Also, an important part of my online presence is the community site of my website. I've just recently, and this has made a big difference, I've just recently put the community part of my website on the front page. It used to be off on a page by itself. It used to be on a page that looks a lot like this, slightly different formatting, but basically, and then all the discussion topics And I thought about that, and I realized, well, I'm breaking all my own rules. Because one of the key rules that I've had from day one, as long as I've been in this, is the whole idea that online instruction is not just content, but the mixture of content and interaction right in the same space. And it's interesting, the Poynter Institute, which is an institute of online journalism, it's based in the United States, he recently did a study they call the iTrack study. iTrack 3 is the name of the study. And of course, I linked to it in my newsletter. So those of you who read the newsletter will have seen this link. One of the things that they found is barriers are really huge online. A little simple line will mean the difference between somebody going somewhere and somebody not. You wouldn't think. So when I actually designed this page, I thought really carefully about this line. Do I want this line here? Because it's going to stop a significant number of people. It's going to stop their eyes from going over there. And I thought, yeah, I want people who are coming back, people who are new, I want them to kind of look at this part because this is the meat of the site. And I wanted to make this jump as easy as possible. So there is a line to indicate that it's separate, but it's on the same page. The community is a discussion area. And I'm sure you're all familiar with discussion lists. And discussion lists, people overcomplicate them. This one is intended to be simple. And so here is the post that somebody has posted. Is this new? It might be. This is such an awkward mouse. And you can read the post or you can read the entire topic. Those are the options. So we take a look at the post. And here's the post. And if you want to reply to the post, you click reply. That's pretty much the functionality of my discussion list. It's worked really well over the years. It's really working well now that it's on the front page. I have a chat. I don't know what's on the chat now, so. And I don't use the chat very much. I hardly ever use the chat. Oh, good. That note, you can't tell, but that note is on the top is from my wife. In Moncton, New Brunswick, and I've been trying to our regular communication channel, which is instant messaging, isn't working properly, so I'm using this, even though it's pretty public and I can't really be as open as I would like to be, because anybody in the world could be watching, and right now the whole room is watching. But you know, here's a friend from Brisbane that I posted up on it. This is, as far as technology goes, this is about 20 lines, maybe 30 lines of Perl code to make this work. I wrote it in an afternoon. Simple chat. I don't use it a lot. I hardly ever use it because the work that I do, the way I approach things, I don't have regular online schedules or anything like that. If people really need to contact me in real time, they can contact me using ICQ. ICQ is an instant messaging program, and it sits on my laptop. And, oh, you can hardly see it. There's the thing right down there. I'm not online with my laptop, so of course it's grayed out. But anytime I'm online, I'm available through that. One of the things I was going to add, but didn't have time to do in time for this trip, although I'll probably do it for the next trip, is I'll install a program called Skype onto this desktop here, and my wife uses a Linux system that I set up, and I'll install it on the Linux system for her. Skype is basically internet telephony. The microphone and headphones or speaker, I can have real-time voice communication between here and wherever, absolutely free. I called her from the hotel in Canberra because I hadn't heard from her online. $84. That wasn't a long call, and I was cutting it short, and I felt guilty. Sorry, I really don't want to have to cut us off, but, you know, I mean, this could really, I had no idea. $84. It was like a 20-minute call. Skype. Free.
That's from the hotel.
Pardon?
Where you rang from?
Yeah, from the hotel. It was probably like, the, I mean, it was in the middle of the day.
$48 was a call.
Yeah, but the thing is, you know, I'm on the road. I don't really have time to mess around with, you know, getting the right price and all of that. All I can do is pick up the phone, make the phone call, and hope it doesn't break the bank. Because, you know, it's hard to do these things. But whatever the cost would be, even if you're calling off hours from your home with no hotel charges or anything like that, Skype is still cheaper. Because the software is free and the call is free. So I'll probably be using that at some point in the future. For those of you who've just come in, what I'm doing is just, by way of introduction, outlining what I do for e-learning in my world, the type of things that I do. Basically, looking at my major e-learning tool, which is my website, and then working from there. After these sort of introductory remarks, I'm actually going to want to look at the topic of this session a little bit, but what I'm doing now is just sort of setting the groundwork, and then once the groundwork is set, I'm going to try to be more interactive and follow themes and issues that are of your interest based on what you've seen so far. So if you're thinking of questions or comments, you know, jot them down or whatever, we'll get to that. And we've got more people who have just come in, but I'm not going to do this a third time. Because the people who are listening, oh yeah, and for those of you who have come in also, just in the interest of full disclosure, because there are probably laws, not that I'm worried about that, but I do tape my talks, and so this is being recorded right now. So if you swear at me, it will be posted online. This is the internet. okay. So anyhow, that's my chat. It's basically a moving discussion board, and as you can see, I can put in links and so on. This is a link. Oops. And there we go. This is where I was yesterday. Because I wanted to make sure I didn't miss seeing a kangaroo this time. It's my third trip to Australia, and the previous two I did not see one kangaroo. This time I was not taking chances. Well, I don't know that. Because what it is, you have to know where to look. They're just out there on the lawn. That's pretty funny. Okay. Another thing, and this is a new thing I've added to my website. I only added this a little while ago, but it fits so perfectly with the philosophy of learning that I'm advancing through my website, and that's a wiki. And how many of you are familiar with wikis? Oh, cool. New stuff. All right. This is the front page of a wiki. It's styled to look and feel like my website. Most wikis look less pretty, but the functionality is the same. It looks and feels just like an ordinary web page. The coloring isn't really showing up here, but there are links in that in this. The difference between a wiki and a web page is, if we scroll down to the bottom of this, you see a link here that says edit this page. Now, last time I went into this wiki, I was in Canberra, and I said, hello, Canberra. We'll just change that. I'll go, hello, Sunshine Coast. Good enough. I'm never really sure exactly where I am at any moment in time. And I'll hit save. Now, the first thing I want you to notice is how easy that was. And right, it's also very polite. It thanks me for my contribution. And we'll go back to the page to have a look at it. And here we are. Page has been changed. Hello, Sunshine Coast. Very simple. Couldn't get simpler, right? And there are some simple mechanisms for doing things like links. Like, let's put a link to something in here. Does somebody have a website you'd like to see me link to? www.adventurer.com.au. Oops, I try to spell AU correctly. I'll just give that a little space there. And come on, mouse is harder to use than the software. Thank you for your contribution. Oops, didn't do that right. Sorry, forgot the HTTP. There we go. Oh, come on, mouse. Unbelievable. How can a mouse not work? I mean, it just kills it. And there's a functioning link. Oh, right. That's right. I'm sorry. I forgot. I've set this up. It's even simpler than most wikis. Let's type the URL in. And then fight with the mouse a bit. Now I'll save it. And click here to save the page. And we have a functioning link. That's all there is to it. Lots of things in wikis are like that. The markup, as they call it, is incredibly simple. You want a link, type in the URL. Nice site. Image heavy. Now, think about this site. Does this site follow the rules from iTrack 3? iTrack 3, the people are first going to look at near the top, a little over to the left. So somebody looked at this page, they're going to look here. Is this what you want to do to see first? Then their eyes will move here. Then their eyes will move down here. That's the trap. That repeats across web pages. Odd and strange, but there you have it. So basically, they're not going to see this. They're not going to see this. Also, iTrack, people don't linger on images. In printed text, images are heavy. They grab the reader. On the web, images don't do that. People pass over images. So, look at that. Basically, somebody seeing this, now you've got maybe a second, 2 seconds of their attention. It's Twitch speed, right? Somebody looks at this. What have you given them? Cairns. That's your content. That's what they saw. I love this stuff.
It's in red too, so it's out of
red. Yeah, it's in red. It's got a little yellow outline and a black shadow. So, but I figure it's kind of big, so they'll probably get the word Cairns. But Cairns to Cape York on a whatever. I don't even know what a hobby cat is. But really, they'll get the word Cairns, and it won't be the first thing they see. They'll actually see it, they'll be about half a second into the page before they actually need it. So they're sort of sitting there lost, and words, any words, and they'll finally land on Cairns. And I don't know if this will hook them. Anyhow, sorry, that was an aside. You suggested the link. Now, and then the rest of my site is more loosely organized. I basically have, I hate this mouse, my research topics, and any of these you can click on, and this isn't, come on, mouse. And what clicking on this link, this is way too slow, and I have to fix this. This should pop up like that. People back out of the, you see how long we've been waiting so far. This is my site more than your internet connection. Also, it's Internet Explorer, so the spacing doesn't work properly, even though it's web.
The mouse on your laptop, I suppose.
Pardon?
The mouse on your laptop.
Yeah, I'm not going to use Internet Explorer on the laptop because the last time I did that, it turned off my sound. For those of you who were at the breakfast show, this is the unintended side effect I was talking about of using Microsoft products. You never know what they're going to do to something else. It's just, so I'm going to work with this even though the mouse is bad, because I'm probably not going to linger here for too long. But the idea here is now, this is a resource base of all the items that I've ever put into OL Daily, and actually the newsletter itself started in May of 2001, but the records themselves go back to 1998 sometime, because that's when I first started doing this as what they call a blog. So, what's the theory here? There's a bunch of things working together, right? Part of the theory is simplicity of function. There's nothing complicated about my site. You don't need to do anything in order to use it. You simply start using it. And over the years, I've tried to make it more and more logically arranged, more and more simple to find whatever you're looking for. I will be the first to admit I'm not there yet. The search and for the resources isn't where it should be. But the second thing, and the more important thing, is for somebody who is in the field of e-learning, whether they're just beginning — I have many readers who are just starting, lots of people writing and saying, you know, I'm just starting my MBA, or not MBA, my nobody from my MBA programs, well, maybe there are, my Master's of Distance Education, or I'm just starting my education degree, and I found your site, all the way through to people who are senior managers in various organizations, and the people at EDNA subscribe to this, people at EDUCAUSE in the United States, so on and so forth. So we've got the whole range. And this is e-learning in practice. What's on my site isn't just about e-learning. It is the discipline of e-learning actually unfolding itself. It's not a teaching site. It's a work site. But the idea here is that people who are new to the field of e-learning are introduced to e-learning by being immersed into the discussion, the dialogue, the resources, and things like that of people who are actually practicing in e-learning. And then if you look at the selection of materials over time, you find that I do put introductory stuff, because people who are in the field write introductory stuff from time to time. And then I do the full range, and I'll link to stuff that, you know, it's got like arrows and squiggles, and like, you want to tear out your hair, and you wouldn't think I tear out my hair a lot, but I do. That's why I keep a lot on hand. Just the most horribly technical stuff that you can get into, and everything in between. And then people pick and they choose. Is very much a user-centered, learner-directed learning system. There's no start point. There's no stop point. There isn't a class that you sign up for. There isn't a cohort. There is a community, and people exchange information through this community. The other thing about this is that my website is part of a network of similar sites. And I'll just go to the projects link here and go to a thing called EduRSS and click on something called EduRSS Contributing Feeds. And we'll come back to this in a little bit as the topic warrants. But all of these sites here, and here they are people who are doing something similar to what I'm doing. And this is, in a real sense, the educational technology research community. If they're doing work in this field, at least along the lines of what I'm describing, they're listed here. So somebody has access to everything here. And come on, Mouse. Come on. Just pick one at random, and that really was at random. You can see my new format hasn't been applied completely across my site. That's typical of my site. I'll roll things out gradually. It doesn't have to be perfect. Perfection is for Plato. It just has to work. So people are used to site changes and things like that being rolled out gradually. I've been receiving emails because the refer link on my newsletter software isn't working quite right. I'll fix it. It'll just be out for a day or two. But, you know, most of the time it works. So here's the Electric Lyceum. Here are the things that this person is doing. They're talking about their work. this site interacts with my site, the stuff that shows up on my site is a version of the stuff that shows up on this site. And it's all, I talk about networks, and I may talk about networks, it's all a network of 300 or so distributed sites of people working this field, and the information flowing between them. And then any given one of the people in this network, myself included, will go through a process that I've put into slogan form called aggregate, repurpose, remix, feed forward. And to me, that's the model of online learning. To me, that's the picture of learning that we should be working toward. And as I say, it's a very different picture from the picture where we get some content together, we toss in some learning design, we feed it to people in a nice linear fashion, and we call that learning. This is very different from that. But more and more, as I work with this system, and as I see the results, and we can talk about the results if you would like, I become more and more firmly convinced that this is the way that learning ought to proceed. So let me stop there, because that's my introductory sort of thing. And we're according to that clock, 45 minutes into the session, give or take. When do we end, by the way?
We take a break at about 10:30.
About half past, oh, perfect, okay.
Half an hour, and then we go on then till 12:30.
So we would be going from 11 to 12:30, okay. Right, an hour and a half. And then there's an afternoon session.
Yes.
But I'll write that talk over the lunch hour, so. This is like Brian Lamb says, you know, fast, loose, out of control. But describes the best classrooms I've ever been in, too. So why don't I pause here? We've got 15 minutes. Why don't you tell me why you don't like this model? Or inquire further into some of the theory or the thought behind it, if you have questions.
Yeah, just a quick one to say, I mean, you're putting forward a quite a radically different model from education as we know it at the moment. While there are perhaps some aspects of what you're talking about, we do attempt to cover in what we do. I guess the first question would be, is how do we pay for it? It's unlikely that we're going to have a number of people around the world like yourself who are going to do this out of their own interest, out of their own enthusiasm. How do we pay for that in terms of providing education?
Okay, a couple of things. The first thing, you say it's unlikely we'll have people doing it out of their own interest, their own enthusiasm. That's demonstrably false. The world's most advanced encyclopedia is not an Encyclopedia Britannica. It's an encyclopedia called Wikipedia. This ISDN will take a few seconds to load here. I never thought I'd be saying ISDN slow. This is Wikipedia. Wikipedia is an online encyclopedia. The content is, in terms of quality, comparable with Encyclopedia Britannica. People have done academic studies, and you can do a search on Google and find these. The quantity of content, there is more content. There are more articles, and the articles are longer in Wikipedia than Encyclopedia Britannica. Of course, the true test of anything is, do people use it? More people use Wikipedia than Encyclopedia Britannica, and that's been measured. So it must cost a fortune to produce. Who is going to produce a free online encyclopedia? And the surprise catch to this story is, nobody gets a dime. Nobody is paid to produce this. This is produced completely and entirely by volunteers. And I showed you the wiki just a few minutes ago, where anybody can go in and edit a page. Wikipedia is the same way. This is an encyclopedia that's used by schools and universities and whatever. I can go in here, pick a page, any page at random, change it. and put whatever in it. There are no rules. I can put whatever in it. You might think, oh, how could this possibly work? But people have adopted pages. And they'll adopt one page, they'll adopt five pages, and they check, they track any changes that get made. And if somebody comes in and just defaces it, which is what I did in Canberra, I went into one of the pages and defaced one of the Wikipedia pages because I wanted to prove that I could. I could do it here, but I don't really feel like making work for somebody. But they watch, they can track all the changes on a page and then correct the page. And what happens is various people collaborate and have no idea who the other person is because it's not, you don't even get credit for contributing to Wikipedia. It's all done anonymously. And the information gets put there. And the information gets put there in a clear, politically neutral, non-biased way. It has to be that way because the only way to get information in that will stay is to type it up in such a way that somebody else isn't going to come along later and change it. And so it sort of settles toward the medium. So, categorically false. People will do things for free. I have a name for it. I actually have a name for this. I call it the butterfly thesis. Not the butterfly principle. That's something completely different. I don't know if things are like this here in Australia, but in Canada, if you drive around Canada, you see all these homes and that. And what they have are these big wooden butterflies. Do you have those here, the big wooden butterflies? I see some nodding. You said they come in threes, right? And they put them on the house. Butterfly, butterfly, butterfly. A big one, little one, a little one. You know, I was driving around. Actually, I was in a bus, but because I don't drive. But looking at these houses and thinking, well, why do people put butterflies on a house? They don't get paid. There's no upside to it. It doesn't even affect the value of the house. You know, sometimes, you know, they get a little worn out or whatever. They do it because they want to. There's no economic incentive, but they want to put butterflies into the world. It's butterfly thesis. So people will do that. Now, there were two other parts to what you said, and I'm afraid I've forgotten, but I did have answers to them.
The sign itself, that's called something.
I'm sorry?
The sign itself, just as a...
Yes. Yeah, Wikipedia itself is run through donations, and you can donate to Wikipedia, and people do donate to it. The actual cost of running the site is completely funded through donations. Oh yeah, now I know what I was going to say. Now, I'm not saying, and it would be absurd for me to claim, that all of e-learning will be produced for free by volunteers. I am willing to say that a good chunk of it would be. More so than you might think. We have this mindset that it will all be produced by professionals and publishing houses and so on and so forth. I expect over time that a good amount of the learning content that we use, that we call learning objects, that we will exchange through repositories, will be produced by students who put it back in to share. They will, to a large degree, draw from resources that are put out there by people who are paid. I am one such person. I am, in fact, paid to do my job. I don't work for free. I have this little thing about needing to eat. I'm picky that way. Well, I'm paid by the federal government. I work for the National Research Council of Canada. And I'm essentially paid by the government to produce these resources. I sat down and I calculated whether they are actually getting good value for their money. And they paid me a certain salary, which I won't go into. But just looking at the effectiveness of my newsletter, I estimated, and I might have been overly generous, but I estimated that my newsletter, when it arrives into somebody's email box, saves them an hour of time a day. And those of you who actually do get the newsletter, there's a number of you here, right? Could you raise your hands again? Okay, let's do a quick empirical test. An hour a day. Would you say it saves you that? Yeah, a nod? Okay. So, an hour a day. Let's take an average wage rate, which for a professional in Canada would be about $40 an hour, give or take. Again, I'm picking a number out of the air, but it's going to be about that, right? So, $40. So, So today, my news, well, I just didn't publish one today because it's still Sunday in Canada, so it's my day off. But Monday, the newsletter will come. It'll save you $40. Well, I send out about 3,000 emails a day. So 3,000 times $40 is $120,000. That's per day. And then I do it 200 times a year, because I only do it on weekdays, right? So 120,000 times 200, 240,000, 2.4 million? Or is it 24 million? I can't do math in my head. Well, I can. I just don't like to. The point here, now it's an off-the-cuff calculation, and the numbers, of course, are highly suspect. But I think I can make a good argument to the taxpayers of the country that the money they put in, they pay my salary, plus they pay, you know, for a computer and some internet connectivity. So, you know, the expense isn't huge for what they get out. I think that argument can be made. So I think there is a large role for publicly funded educational content that is paid for by the government and put out there for free. And that this is one of the things, and I'll be talking in one of the sessions, I think this afternoon, about open education. This is the point of open education. The payoff is so huge. And now the third thing that responds to your question is we need to think about the context in which this is happening. We have this idea, I don't know why we have this idea, but we have this idea that educational content is something different. In fact, that learning is something different from everything else we do in our lives. In fact, we have separate rooms that we go into to go off and learn, right? And you know, the learning rooms or, well, schools. We have content that's produced specifically for the purpose of education. But the model that I'm talking about, that I'm proposing here, is stuff that's produced by people who are working in the course of doing their work. So it's kind of like skimming the cream off the top. I watch, this is my job, this is what Robin Good calls a newsmaster. I watch the ebb and flow of communication in my field as it goes by, and it really is. If you're on my end and doing this newsletter, you'd see it's an ebb and it's a flow, and there are waves that come in, and themes and currents and so on. I watch that, and I pick the stuff off the top. All of this stuff is being produced. It's being produced by e-learning companies, white papers, people doing talks at conferences, a guide that somebody wrote up for their own staff, all of these things. Pick them out and put them into the newsletter. It's a filtering, right? Aggregate, filter. I repurpose it, I add my take on it, and then feed it forward. There's no real cost to producing this. I'm just picking up stuff that has already been produced. So really, the approach to learning that I'm advocating can actually be done very cheaply, because I'm trying to get away from the idea of specially producing, you know, publisher-polished e-learning content that is good for this year, and then next year you have to get next year's edition. I'm trying to get away from that. And I think it has been successful. Proof is in the pudding. And in the end, I'm an empiricist. I would say an empirical scientist, but that might be pushing it. Although, just for the record, I did apply for and was accepted as a member of the Luxuriant Hair Club for Scientists. It actually exists. And they did accept me as a member. So I feel safe in saying that I'm a scientist, because I've been accepted by real scientists, albeit those with long hair. So that's the answer. You know, get away from the commercial stuff, get away from the prepackaged stuff, and just tap into the information flow as it goes by, and pull from that. And that is your educational content. Does that answer it?
Yeah, I get that. I certainly agree with what you're providing is a really good quality skim off the top of the conversations that are going on. I guess the other side of that really is the doing of education and how people access that and how that happens. I guess that's sort of...
Where's the social interaction?
Okay. There's actually quite a bit of social interaction. This is part of it. I mean, my life isn't my website. My work isn't my website. That's a big part of it. But, you know, something like this is part of the social interaction. And I've always felt that it's important not only to do the stuff that I do online, but to follow that up. But the thing is, you know, I'll meet you guys here. I'll be up in Cairns. I'll meet people there. I do the same thing in Canada. I go from city to city in Canada. There's enough personal interaction that we can get the online interaction off the ground. And so I'll meet people on a regular basis in this way. And then...
That's your teacher student. What about student student?
Student to student. In the world of e-learning, there are conferences, as I'm sure you know. We encourage that. But students can communicate with each other in a wide variety of ways. One of the things that I have encouraged people to do is to encourage the development of what are called student blogs. A lot of people call my site, well, it's not my site up there now, but a lot of people call my site a blog. It's not quite a blog, although it's very similar. A blog is a website that is created by a person that gets updated on a regular basis. And basically, it's very similar to the wiki that I showed you, except just one person owns a blog. And so they communicate with the world through their blog. And we can follow this up if you like. I wrote an article for Educause Review called Educational Blogging, in which I discuss this. Also, there's the use of discussion boards and things like that. So there is very much the capacity for student-to-student interaction made possible by the use of blog technology and by the use of discussion boards. And then the trick, and it is a trick, is to get people into that frame of mind, into the idea of reading what other people have to say and passing on your own thoughts about that. And my feeling is that the best way to encourage that is to practice that, because it becomes the model that people want to emulate when they're in a field, particularly as you get more advanced in learning and people want to be part of the professional community. They will look at what people in that community do and then emulate that. And so if people who are in that community are communicating and having an open, distributed community like that, that gives people who are students the capacity to interact with each other and with people who are in the professional community in the same way. And people do that. If you look at the younger generation today, because part of this talks about the new student, there's no question about the use of internet technologies as a means of interaction and communication. Everything from, you know, the kids with just glued to their cell phones, and that's all part of this, and they use their mobile phones, I guess they're called here, and they also use them to send instant messages via SMS. And these days now, with things like the little cameras on the phones, they've started sending pictures to each other. And they send the content of these things, they do send it to their website. There are, I don't know, about 3 or 4 million blogs out there now. The vast majority of these blogs, like 80-85%, are created by people under 25. It's just an explosion of expressiveness by the younger generation. And that's just the people who want to posture publicly, right? But under 15, I couldn't give you an answer. I do know that there's a significant number. I know that there's a significant number because I've worked in Canada with educators who are rolling out blogs, student blogs, for like grade 5, grade 6. In fact, the paper that I talked about just a few moments ago, Educational Blogging, the lead example that I use is of a grade 5 class in a place called the Institut Saint-Joseph in Quebec City, and they're using blogs with their students in the school. And they've got a variety of types of blogs set up. There's the public blog, and then there's the blog that the student can use just to communicate with the other students, and then there's the personal one, which is just the student communicating with the instructor and the parents. So there are different levels of openness and privacy. And sure. Oh, absolutely. Where was it? I just ran it in the newsletter Friday. There's a university in the States. I know it's not grade 5, but blog for every student on campus. Right. Now, how many of them will take that up? That's an open question. You know, a blog is a form of public speaking and therefore is not for everyone. But there's so many channels of internet communication available today. All you need to do, if you have a bunch of students in a certain area, is just give them access to each other. Make sure they trade cell numbers or you know, instant messaging handles or whatever. Make sure that they have a place online where they can put this information. And they will do it. We know this. We see this. You see this in practice. They will take care of it. The lack of use of electronic media to form community, the reluctance to do that, is much more a property of the older generation. They need to be pushed, right? And they feel like it's off a cliff. But the younger generation, they grew up with this stuff. This is as natural to them as speaking. And it is for them, quite literally, the same as speaking. And there's study after study after study that shows this.
Well, you've only got to watch a teenager sitting at home doing his homework at a PC, and he's got two instant messages boxes open at the top, and he's maybe got the friend down the road on this one and a friend over the other side of the town on that one. He's there, they're messy, and he's doing his homework at the keyboard at the same time. They multitask.
Oh, yeah.
They multi-communicate all the time, and that's at anywhere from sort of 10 years old up.
Yeah. And my belief is that number, that age, is getting lower and lower and lower as the kids get access to the technology. It's just, it was hard for, you know, an 8-year-old to buy a cell phone in the past, but it's getting easier now. And parents expect it, you know, you better have your cell phone turned on. I want to know where you are.
I can see that the blog is the conversation, isn't
right?
It? But your blog is very directed by you,
right?
In that you're setting the tone for that. Now, what is our role as teachers if we're talking about year 3 blogs? I mean, we can't just have them blogging all the time because they mightn't be. The parents might be saying, well, what are you
doing? Yeah. So the question, and this is for the microphone here, is what about the curriculum? What about the planning? What about the learning design? Because, yeah, I mean, you put a bunch of kids in a room, they're not just going to automatically assemble themselves into a math class. I agree. I'm from the school of thought, and it's a bit of a minority school of thought, but it has some very high-profile proponents, people like Seymour Papert, people like James Paul Gee, who advocate the use of, and I want to be really hesitant about how I say this, the use of games in learning. Now, it sounds like a triviality. Oh yeah, we'll just have them go play games, but it's not that. I represent this, when I talk about this, I talk about learning environments. And I prefer the use of the term learning environment rather than the use of the term game, because while the mechanisms and the background technology that I advocate the use of are consistent with and drawn from games, the actual design and implementation of a learning environment isn't simply a question of play the way a game is. Now, by that I don't mean And I emphatically don't mean these teaching games. Because these teaching games, you know, you read their posts. Kids see these a mile away. And they know what this is, and it's like, oh yeah, we got a teaching game. How could I tell? It was incredibly boring. And it had this obvious overt message, etc., etc. But I think that, I want to draw this out, and I want to be careful about how I draw this out, but I think that the idea here is to take the attitude that even when somebody is very young, quite young, we want to begin immediately integrating them into the community. We've worked over the last, century and a half, with the idea that education is something that's segregated from the rest of life. And I think that we're reaching the end of that period. And the reason why we're reaching the end of that period is that technology is making it possible to deliver learning to a person no matter where they are. And, you know, as I say to people, you know, the best place to learn about trees is in a forest. The best place to learn about the laws in the courts. And so this is not going to happen tomorrow. It's not going to happen in 5 or 10 years, but it will happen eventually, where kids begin by being active, active functional participants in a community. They quote unquote work. They quote unquote vote, debate, follow issues, things like that. They begin to find their role in the community right from an early age. And you might think, slave labor, child labor, you can't do that. But the world of work isn't coal mines anymore. Now, a coal mine is obviously an inappropriate place for a kid. But what about a courtroom? Well, maybe not. Maybe that's okay. You know, certainly, you know, the very young ones, you know, you might want the judge to be using discretion about what cases the kids are there. But for those kids who are interested in law, why not? And you might still think, oh, this is so radical. But look at things like, especially here in Australia, the sports programs and things like that. What age, well, you don't have figure skating here, what age do kids start swimming competitively? Maybe you can tell me.
Five?
They're preparing for the Olympics at age 5. Why can't they be preparing for their work? You know, in Canada, we have kids 5, I don't know, they're this big. I don't know how old they are when they're that. They're on figure skates, or they're playing hockey. I played hockey before I went to school. And I was describing, you know, I was tripping over the blue line, things like that, and it was me, and it was all my equipment, and the equipment outweighed me, but that's how people grow up in Canada, is playing hockey from this early age. There's nothing inherently unreasonable about engaging a child in society at a very early age, and we do it. The world of music is full of kids who are learning the violin or the piano. They can't really do the piano very well because it takes them 2 hands. Anyhow, from a very early age. And so they can be engaged in a wide scope of activities. Now, this is not full-fledged, right? We're not giving 5-year-olds the vote. Nobody expects that. And there's a lot of theory in the world of gaming about ways of bringing inexperienced people through in various levels of the game with increasing capacity and increasing responsibility. But what I'm saying is the environment that they would use, whatever their vocation or avocation is in their attitude, that's the environment they begin with when they're a kid. Now, obviously, things change. Technology changes over the 10, 15 years it takes to become an adult. But that becomes part of their environment, and they're already used to that. So by the time they get into the world of work, this is something they've been doing all their lives. And they've been getting reward for it. They've been communicating with people, practitioners. I think, as an educator, part of the work that I am doing should be interacting with five-year-olds who are interested in teaching, or RSS. But do interact with some very young people in the world of computing. Some of the in RSS, which is one of the technologies behind a lot of the stuff on my site, most of the work, well, not most, but a good chunk of the work in defining the basic specification was done by a guy called Aaron Schwartz. And he did most of that when he was 13. And he got started in it, obviously, earlier. Now, I argue with him. You know, I'm a professional research scientist in Canada arguing with this 13-year-old kid. But why not? Nothing wrong with that. And like, this person is going to be so prepared for the world of work thereafter. Now, obviously I'm skimming the surface here, but I really believe that if we take an environment, give it the structure and capacity of a game, and we can talk a lot about internal game logic, that provides the structure that they need. And then the final question is, well, what about mathematics? Because there aren't mathematical games. Well, there are mathematical games, but they're crashingly boring. You would never go to a mathematical game. But the thing is, the things that they do in this gaming environment require, from time to time, the fundamental skills and knowledge that we would talk about as being foundational in a curriculum. When they need it for something that they are trying to do, that's when we make it available. And now what we have is somebody, instead of forcing them to sit in a classroom and listen to trigonometry just in case, we've got somebody who's interested, who wants to know this now, and we provide it to them. And this talk is about learning objects. That thing that we provide in a learning object on the on-demand, as-needed point in time, that, to me, is what a learning object is. I'm sure this will work, because it does work. It works in other disciplines. It works in the gaming community. We see people amass incredible bodies of knowledge. Unfortunately, they're of non-real worlds, so it's not really useful. But incredible bodies of knowledge in the gaming environment. People talk about motivation in education. The problem with games is getting them to stop and eat. And things like that. Motivation in this sort of environment is not an issue. When you talk about preparation for life, I think the best preparation for life is to live it. And that's the kind of approach that I'm trying to advocate here. I think this is a good time for a break.
After a break, yeah.
Okay. And we'll pick
a
up.
Website from Great Britain.